When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hi, listeners. Tom here. Sorry I couldn't make the pod last night. I just had a few kind of real life issues going on. Same for the pods being a little bit late out. I'm really sorry about that. Just kind of got time today to get around to doing it. I hope you enjoy the pod with Lucy and Sam, and I will hopefully be back next week.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello, everyone. The biggest double game week of the season is upon us, and it started with plenty of drama. As if Bukayo Saka's shock benching wasn't enough, Tom is also benched tonight due to unexpected real-life commitments. That leaves you with me deputising for him and the wonderful Sam deputising for me. We can only hope we're as convincing without Tom as Arsenal were without Saka. Once again, we're midway through a game week, so we'll be doing our best to look ahead without too many tentative answers. We'll also be avoiding any mention of Southampton Football Club, aside from under the list of teams to target. So, Sam, it's great to have you back on. How are you doing?
Yeah, very well, thank you. It's great to actually finally get to talk to you directly. We've been sort of ships passing in the night on WGTA in recent weeks. So, great to chat to you. Great to be back on the show. And it's been an all right game week so far. It still feels like quite early days. Obviously, we've got the Spurs game. The Spurs game coming today whilst we're recording as well. So fingers crossed for good news there on the Kane front. But I won't cry about Saints today. We'll try and avoid that for the time being. We are who got the assist, and it feels great to be able to say that. I've always wanted to say that. You can find Tom on the main account at WGTA_FPL. You can find Lucy at Lucy Hynett with two T's. And you can find me, Sam, at FPL Pricey. On the pod today, we'll start with this week's surprise and potential absentees. Saka, obviously, Haaland and De Zerbi threatening rotation in midweek, and what impact this might have on our strategy ahead. With Leicester and Chelsea finally sacking their managers on Sunday, we will check in to see if this represents any new opportunities. And lastly, we'll always, as always, look at the transfers and captaincy for game week 30 in full anticipation of further double game week chaos. We're recording, as I mentioned, on the evening of Monday, the 3rd of April, with the Spurs game going ahead in the next hour or so. So fingers crossed there.
Yes, excellent. Yes, after weeks of me complaining about a lack of opportunities and narrow transfer plans, we were left with a few curveball team sheets after the international break. Some of us caught the news before the deadline, some of us didn't. And now a lot of plans are up in the air, including those involving Mr. Erling Haaland. I locked my transfers in on Friday after the press conferences and checked out of FPL Twitter for the weekend. So I missed the Saka madness and any opportunity to react. Sam, how was your Saturday morning?
Very similar to yours by the sounds of it. I also locked in early. I did do it on Saturday morning. It didn't look like any big news was coming. I didn't have Haaland anyway, so I wasn't looking for early team news that often comes with an 11 o'clock deadline. So I was pretty confident that Saka would start, like everyone else, I guess. So I locked in at about 9 o'clock, then went for a run that finished about five past the deadline. So I came back to the chaos of Saka being benched or potentially benched. Obviously, we didn't know at that time. And none of us were really expecting early team news on Arsenal before the deadline. Obviously, it could have come out at like 1:30 or 1:45, like sometimes it does. But yeah, it was interesting to come back to. In a way, it felt quite nice that I'd missed it altogether, because I feel like, I don't know if you agree, but with, I think it came out about 5 minutes before the deadline on Andy's stream, potentially.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, it was.
So yeah, I don't think I would have reacted well to that. I think I potentially would have panicked, done something really silly, and messed up my team for weeks to come. So in a way, obviously, we only got the 1 point out of Saka, but I don't mind it so much, especially with such high EO and the fact that it means that I don't have another issue to deal with 2 weeks down the line. I think I'm hinting at the fact that if I would have brought in anyone, it probably would have been Madison. And in 2 weeks, I probably would have wanted rid of him anyway. So yeah, it kind of sucks that the news came out before the deadline. Some people were able to react, others weren't in a position to, but that's the burden we bear with FPL, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think what would have thrown me is that, and I think this applied to a lot of people that were around for the news, is that obviously Saturday was April the 1st. Mm. And I think a lot of people were like, oh, Andy's just been done by an April Fool's. Like, there's nothing there.
Yeah. So
that would have been another thing to factor in, I think, as well. Like, how valid is this news? Like, as much as Andy's got good sources, are those sources just having a wind up? Or do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that was like another thing you'd have had to have factored in. I think I'd have probably bought in Salah.
Okay. Did you have the money spare for Salah then?
I just had enough, yeah.
Interesting.
I'd have rolled the dice on it. Which leaves me a bit bitter about it. But like, as you say, in terms of forward planning, that would have been really difficult to kind of maneuver. So sometimes maybe these things are better. I don't know if you're like me, but I really struggle with like last minute decisions. Like if there's anything that requires like a 5 minute turnaround, I tend to like get a bit thrown by that. And I think that's probably why I struggled in previous seasons. You know, when we had a lot of like last minute postponements and random things happening, that was when things tended to unravel on me because I'm just not very good at it. So
yeah.
Do you feel a bit like that?
Yeah, completely. And I think, like, I think I hinted at it a minute ago, if I was around 5 minutes before that deadline, there's no way I would have made a decision. It might have gotten lucky and I might have been up on the decision on this game week, but long term, the decision I made in 5 minutes without being able to look at my spreadsheets and look at all of my planning documents, which is very sad, but I like being able to map it out, would have been very unlikely to have served me long term. I think in your case with Salah, if you were around for the deadline, that would have been maybe an easier decision because Salah looks like a good bet over the next few weeks. Although I suppose it might have locked you out of Haaland.
It would have, yeah.
Next week anyway. So it's a bit of a give and take. I'm not too frustrated by it, especially as we've seen it before with Martinelli being benched earlier this season. Salah as well was a good example a couple of years ago. I think it was against Palace and he came off the bench, scored twice, got an assist and everyone cursing their luck.
Their captaincy, didn't they? He moved off.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, he's benched. We can't use him. And then, yeah.
Exactly. And then it's just sod's law sometimes that these players are just due to come on with about 30 minutes to go, especially if it had been a tight game at that point, which until the penalty, it looked like it might be. And all of a sudden, Leeds with tired legs, he could have had a bit of fun in the last 30 minutes. Obviously, it didn't pan out that way, but we've still got a great player in our sides. Those of us who kept Saka obviously still have a great player in their sides against Liverpool, who've just shipped 4 to Arsenal's title rivals. So I don't think it's a nightmare position to be in. Obviously, if you could have gone to the likes of Salah last minute, then you're feeling better about life right now. But I think it was a last minute decision. And I don't think you can count yourself too unfortunate for having missed it in this particular situation.
Yep, I think we're mostly at peace with the fact that we missed out there.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, he's one of those players that I spent most of the season wanting in my team. So to have moved him out and then worked out another way to get him back in again. I think I had this conversation with Tom last week, which was basically like, I don't think I'm going to move him because I don't know when I'd find the opportunity to bring him back. So just one of those things, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to try and overthink it because I think if that Salah opportunity comes up again, I'll have done it with a bit more planning and a bit more understanding of what I'm doing with it rather than just doing it on the fly. And that probably brings us to our second kind of surprise of the team sheets of Saturday. Haaland was left out of the squad against Liverpool, despite general expectations that his withdrawal from the Norway squad was a convenient excuse for navigating City's busy schedule. And I think the main one of this one is that if he's not fully fit, Pep isn't the type of guy to give us a clear time frame, is he?
No. If anyone was out there that we wouldn't trust with team news, it would probably be Pep. Although in this situation, I don't know about you, I feel quite confident I know what's going to happen with Haaland this week. And I'm never really that confident.
Oh, go on. No, I'm not very confident.
City in general.
You go on.
I just get the sense that he's going to want to give him minutes ahead of the Champions League. And I think it would feel a bit weird to throw him in after like effectively a proper injury and 3 weeks without a match to go straight into a knockout round against Bayern. I think he gets 60 against Southampton and probably has a lot of fun in that 60 and then gets taken off around the 60 minute mark if things are looking okay. But again, predicting Pep is a tough game, and I say I'm confident. I'm as confident as a person can be in predicting Pep, but I feel like he should get minutes before going into a crunch match in the Champions League. I don't know about you.
I don't see what you're saying there, but I'm also wondering if he thinks that half an hour against Southampton's enough, which...
Yeah, probably is.
It probably is. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't take a lot to find your way into a game against Southampton, does it? So... Mm. Maybe it's not so bad. I think it is probably, because you did mention it, worth touching on City's schedule for April, because it is insane. They've got Southampton on the 8th, the first leg against Bayern on the 11th, Leicester on the 15th, the second leg against Bayern on the 19th, the FA Cup semi against Sheffield United on April the 22nd, Arsenal on April the 26th in what's a pretty crunch game, and then Fulham on the 30th. So they're basically playing every 3 or 4 days for the entire month.
Yeah, okay. I'm less confident now.
Immediate backtrack. What have I said? Yeah. What have I done? Which is what makes me nervous, because Kieran asks if Alvarez and Haaland can play together and who we should be targeting from City. And looking at that schedule, I'm thinking they can play together, but are they actually ever going to play together? Because Pep usually needs a striker at this point. You know, they seem to have reoriented their team around playing with a central striker again after obviously last season not really playing with one. And it seems to me that Pep will want to keep one of them always kind of in the fire to keep them in shape. So where are you with City and kind of more generally beyond Haaland's potential minutes? Because I guess we're going to have to see how the dust settles on that one and the press conferences later in the week.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. We'll get more information on Haaland and fitness later in the week. If he's trained as well, we'll see pictures too. So we'll have a lot of info to go on with Haaland. But with the other players, it's always been a minefield. And Alvarez, if we know he's starting, what a bargain he would be. It would be incredible to have him up top alongside Haaland. And I completely agree with the line of questioning. If we could have any sort of confidence of that happening, I think he'd be in most of our sides within a couple of weeks. But I think City have landed on a shape this season. And again, he does like to mix it up. He does like to think of different ways of planning a way to win a game, especially late in the Champions League. But I feel like what you said is completely right. They're trying to play with this one striker system. And if Alvarez was to play with Haaland, he'd probably play in KDB's role as that floating eight, or maybe out wide on the right where Mahrez and Foden have been playing recently as well. I think Alvarez is more than capable in both of those positions. I'm pretty sure he's played in KDB's role once or twice, and Pep did mention how well adjusted he was to that position. So I could see that happening once or twice, but because we're getting to the crunch matches in the Premier League now, I don't think Alvarez is realistically going to be replacing Kev in any given Premier League game, considering they're chasing Arsenal down. maybe it happens after 60 minutes he comes in and gives KDB a bit of a rest, or maybe once or twice he'll get played out on the right. But I have no confidence of Alvarez getting consistent minutes. And unfortunately, at this stage in the season, you probably want a player that you've got a little bit more confidence of consistent minutes. Speaking of, what I didn't realise until yesterday was the consistency that Grealish and Gundo have had in the team recently. Have you noticed this as well? They've just been playing non-stop.
Yeah, so Grealish was the big guy that I was going to point out, just because we're thinking of players that might potentially get minutes, because the fixtures are really, if I mean, obviously, with the big asterisk about their whole schedule and the Champions League and the FA Cup, etc., their Premier League fixtures are actually really good, because we've got Southampton coming, then Leicester. There's the blank, for which I assume a lot of people will be free hitting anyway. There's obviously Arsenal, but I mean, they'll play their strongest team then anyway, because they have to. And then there's Fulham, West Ham for the double. Fulham, West Ham for the double is pretty good. Leeds and Everton before they have Chelsea. And they've obviously got another fixture to be arranged as well. So, I mean, you'd want, if you could, more than just Haaland. The issue is where you get that coverage from. And I think probably at the moment, Grealish is the man you'd be looking at. I mean, his output's improved significantly since the World Cup. He obviously had that goal and assist against Liverpool this week. And his minutes are 88, 90, 90, 71, 90, 76, 68, 90, 90, 90. I mean, he the last time he didn't start a game was against Man United in game week 20.
Yeah. And even then he came on and assisted, didn't he?
Yes, that week? He did. Oh, no, he scored a goal.
Oh, he scored. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. So, yeah, he's been, I think he started, is that the last 10 you mentioned? And then,
yeah, that's the last 10, because it was a double game week in 20, yeah.
So he's really locked that left wing position down. And I don't know about you, I feel like yesterday was his best game in a City shirt so far. And
by a long way, I think.
Yeah. So it looks like finally he's getting into the right positions for end product as well. I know Pep loves him as a ball carrier anyway, and loves that aspect to his game, but it looks like he might be starting to develop a sort of a second role for City and be more productive in front of goal and actually creating those final chances.
Definitely. I was just thinking, if you're a Madison owner, is that some, I mean, I know you're not and I'm not, but if we were, do you think Grealish would be somewhere we'd be looking?
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. At that price point, especially when you think about the way the fixtures fall for Leicester, obviously they go up against City in 2 weeks. And that seems like the perfect switch, as long as you are free hitting in game week 32, of course. Grealish in for someone like a Madison, the timing couldn't be better, really, because then you're playing Grealish against Leicester, who have been extremely leaky all season, and then get to free him out for 32, straight back in ahead of the double, which, as you mentioned previously, is about as good as the doubles come in game week 34, I think, as well. And obviously then 37, I think, is a double for them too.
That'll be a double likely, yeah.
So yeah, Grealish looks like a great bet. I think the problem that a lot of people will have is, where do we fit him in? Because most of us will have two Brighton, either a Saka at the moment or with an eye on Salah, I guess, moving in the next few weeks, and then probably two United in a lot of cases as well. So unless you've got Madison in, which I think is he's about 50% EO, so maybe I'm underrating that move slightly.
yeah.
But yeah, if you don't have Madison in, it's harder to find that space for a Grealish or a Gundogan. But if you do, then I think you're looking at a great differential ahead of the run-in.
Yeah, I think that is a fair point. I think a lot of people have probably either got Bruno or Madison. So Madison, you've got a kind of more natural avenue. If you've got Bruno Fernandes, you're probably not looking at Grealish, because he's locked down pretty much now, isn't he? So
yeah,
it just depends where you are from a strategy perspective. I can't see a way that I'd get Grealish in, as much as I quite like him. I know you mentioned kind of Gundogan in passing there. Are you quite a Gundogan fan? Because I know Tom's big on Gundogan, and I'm always a bit like, he's a central midfielder, I'm not sure I'm that keen.
Yeah, he goes through little patches where he's more productive. I remember a couple of seasons ago he just went through a patch where he was basically playing second striker, so I'm keeping an eye on it for moments like that. I don't think he's a realistic option that I'm considering at the moment, especially because I'm one of the people that my midfield has basically picked itself for the next few weeks. I need to get across to Salah eventually, but I don't, unless an injury strikes, I don't foresee being able to slot in a Man City midfielder. But he's one that I would keep an eye on if he's getting consistent minutes. And because he plays that eight role for City quite regularly, they do often like throwing that number eight into the box with late runs. And if Grealish is on the cutback or is cutting back to an eight that's drifting in, Gundogan's the one playing on the inside left where the cutback would go to. So I see him potentially being an option, but it would take a brave person to go for Gundogan over the options we've got in midfield already. So it's an outside bet, but if you're chasing rank and you fancy something a little bit different, then maybe.
Right, well, there you go. Is there anyone else from City? Because I'm one of those players that's looking for kind of opportunities. And I think probably one of the players that I'm looking at my team is Chilwell, because I don't know if I'll want to hold him. I know he will have another double probably in 37, but their fixtures before that aren't great. They've obviously now got this uncertainty around the manager, which I'm sure we'll discuss later. But I'm looking at City and hoping that I can find a defender. Now, I've looked through some of their minutes and it's a bit hard to make out. And I guess for a lot of people, a defender would be much more convenient. Any defenders you'd be keen on?
Yeah, I think if I was going to get another City player, it would probably have to be a defender at this point, because that's the only place in my team that's got any flexibility over the next weeks, I think. The problem is, like you mentioned, I can't really see where I'm going at the moment. Ake's been playing really well, so I mean, that's an option. I haven't tracked his minutes recently, but obviously he looks fairly well nailed into that team.
The worry with Ake is the cameos. So he does like quite regularly get 90 minutes and it's great. But the two he's had recently where he didn't start, he's had a 1 minute against Forest and a 5 minutes against Villa. And I know you're not going to think from a defender if they come on as a sub anyway. But the sub 10 minute cameos are the really painful ones, you know, where you're like, oh, what a waste of a spot that is. So yeah, that's the kind of thing that annoys me about Ake, because if he was either completely not in the squad or starting, you could at least kind of stomach when he misses. But when he gets these cameos, it's just so painful to take.
Yeah, and Pep likes bringing him on for a cameo to just solidify for the last 5 minutes, doesn't he? Like, it's not just random that he has happened to come on for 5 minutes. There's logic that Pep could easily use again for the rest of the season if he needs to. So yeah, that's an issue. If someone like Stones got a run of like 90 minutes week in, week out, then I would definitely be more tempted to jump on him than Ake for that reason. But at this point, and City just haven't been keeping that many clean sheets all season, so I don't think there's any real rush to run to a City player. And I know there's a lot of people talking about Edison potentially, and that seems like maybe the simple solution, but I just don't know if I can bring myself to do that. As like, especially when they're conceding one big chance every game and it seems to be going in every week. I don't know if I could do that to myself.
I just hate using transfers on goalkeepers. Like, it always feels like a waste. And I know Tom went through a thing last year of just spending so many transfers on goalkeepers. And I feel like it very rarely wins you like a lot of points, because, you know, those big 11 pointers for goalkeepers are just so hard to predict.
Yeah.
You know, the ceiling tends to be quite low. And on Edison, it is very low because he just doesn't get very many saves. So, yeah, I think you're probably right in the sense that he's the safe bet, but motivating yourself to use a transfer on it is a tough one. To loop back to Stones, yeah, I think if he can keep fit and keep starting, he's probably the one, because he either basically doesn't play or does or starts. He's only had one sub appearance all season. So he's the one, I think, that if he looks fit, he'd be the one. But then I do wonder if he'll just be used in the Champions League, because those are the priority games for City in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. And if City go deep in the Champions League, by the time we get to game week 34, I think it'll be very hard to trust anyone other than Haaland. And only because Haaland is so lethal that we would take 90 minutes in one and 30 in the other. With any other City player, you would probably bet on them only playing one of the two if they're going deep in the Champions League at that point. So it's not a position that I want to be thinking about for the next few weeks. I'll probably reassess when I get to game week 33 and see where the land lies on City players at that point. Who knows? Maybe Mahrez is starting week in, week out on the right wing and we all get suckered into that again. But yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. If Haaland is out like a bit longer, are you using that money? Are you rolling with the money? Do you have any idea on what you might do? Obviously, we've got a lot to happen before then. But I'm just thinking, there's a lot of money burning in a lot of pockets right now. Do people get tempted into using it or do we hold it?
I think you probably use it. Because it's a tough one. But I think the next 2 weeks for City, because of the way it falls around the Champions League fixtures, if Haaland is for some reason out this week and we get news that he's probably not going to play against Southampton, you're basically making a bet on probably a Salah doing well in two fixtures against Haaland, maybe playing 60 minutes at most against Leicester. And I mean, obviously he could tear Leicester a new one quite easily, but it's Salah in two games and he does perform well against the bigger sides as well. So I would probably be tempted to use the money on someone like Salah.
And most people were planning on selling Tony now on his 9 yellow cards.
Yeah.
Oh, are we looking at hits?
Yeah, potentially. Well, so I've made a couple of notes on this because this is my plan at the moment. Okay. Because I sold Odegaard for Bruno instead of Saka, I now don't have the money to get to Haaland from Tony directly. I would have to take a hit if I got rid of Tony. But the reason I've gone this way is because I genuinely believe that I would be very happy starting both March and Mitoma against Spurs. And I think Spurs go out swinging against Brighton at home under new management. And I think there are spaces in behind for Mitoma and March. So I don't mind benching Tony even if he gets the ban. So, well, only if he gets the ban, otherwise I'll start him. I'll bench him and then probably sell him for Greenwood at 4 million and just burn the spot before game week 32. And then that would give me the money to get to both Salah and Haaland after the free hit, having already got one of the two this week, depending on whether Haaland's fit or not. Haaland would come in for Kane, I think, for me, which sounds so wrong when I say it out loud, but that would be the route I take, I think.
Wow. Yeah, I hadn't realised that you'd cut off the straight swap to Haaland.
Yeah.
That gives your whole strategy a slightly different look, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, it was a call I didn't feel comfortable with, but I was only... I only had 0.1 spare, even if I sold Saka. So I like making my moves quite late in the week. So I had a gut feeling that I'd probably get priced out of it either way. So I just thought I'd prefer to keep the better player. Well, I say the better player, the better FPL asset in Saka, obviously not knowing that he didn't start this week. But I thought I'll go this route and then I'm okay with double Brighton attack against Spurs, and I'll just use that as kind of a differential this coming week and hope that it pays off if Tony gets the ban. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. Obviously he's made it halfway through the game week without the 10th yellow card, so fingers crossed. But this might date very, very poorly by this time tomorrow.
Sam cries to himself watching Redmond. Now, yeah. Okay, cool. I think lots of people will look at Salah quite closely if we do get any bad Haaland news. So I think probably people need to be aware of that, because I expect his EO to soar pretty quickly amongst engaged managers. I think there were quite a few buys this week anyway, but if Haaland, if the money is kind of, you know you can rule that option out, I think Salah will rise pretty quickly. Right, so the last issue, I suppose, on the unexpected changes is that De Zerbi made comments after the Brighton game suggesting that he may look at rotation in midweek because he's had quite a lot of players on international duty and undergoing a bit of kind of fatigue, which is annoying because before the game, he said, no, fatigue is not an issue. So thanks very much for that, De Zerbi. So do you think it's possible we underestimated the influence of the international break this week? Should we have kind of factored that more into our planning, or have we just got unlucky?
Yeah, I think it was something that we were all aware of. I think we knew the risk anyway, but realistically, I don't think anyone was going to be taking out the likes of Mitoma or McAllister when we're not just buying them. We hadn't bought them just for this week anyway. They're long-term picks. A lot of people who wildcarded back in 26 bought them for double game weeks prior to the international break as well, and did very well out of them too, and are still expecting them to do really well in the following two double game weeks. Or is it three? Three double game weeks.
They've got a lot of doubles. That's what everyone knows about Brighton, don't they? Oh, the double team. Yeah, them. Yeah, I love those.
Literally, yeah. They've got basically every week is a double for them. That's the way I'm imagining it.
Basically anyway. Everyone. We'll say that. Yeah.
So if they happen to get 30 minutes off the bench in this double game week, it is annoying, but long term, I think it will still pay off. And I think our strategy was based around them being good picks for the remainder of the season rather than just for bench boost game week 29. And then outside of Brighton, obviously we've still have to wait for the second half of the game week, and there might be more rotation than I'm expecting, but I don't think we've seen that much rotation so far. Obviously Haaland and Saka both being, well, Saka coming off the bench wasn't really a rotation thing. It was more of I think he was ill the night before.
He kept himself on his own bench boost.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. Which is fantastic confidence, especially he must have known that he was benched eventually, and he kept himself anyway. So yeah. Fair play. And Haaland obviously was a real injury in the end, which I wasn't expecting.
No one was.
Yeah. So, I don't think there's been that much rotation. Obviously, it could come in the second game, but I would, if it was an international break issue, it would have probably happened in the first game. So I don't think it's been that bad. And I always think in the past, I've overestimated rotation as an issue, especially over like the Christmas period. And I've ended up making moves that go against my instincts of having the better player just because I think someone's more nailed, and then that better player, even if they get taken off after 60 minutes, have scored much better than the safer dull pick that I've got just because they play 90 minutes. I'm thinking Dunk versus Estupinan, for instance, but obviously that's not really worked out so far this week. But in general, I think I'm safe in the knowledge that it will pay off long term, and a bit of rotation at the back end of this game week would be frustrating, but so far I think we've gotten off okay.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. I think especially at Brighton's price points, you can kind of stomach everything being a little bit off kilter. I think, you know, in terms of being roughly 5.5 midfielders and, you know, 4.5 defenders, that, you know, you've just got to take it on the chin to a certain extent. And I think Brighton have just been no-brainers to a certain extent, so we just have to take it on the chin. And I think the majority of bench boosts so far this week are looking quite good. Is that's kind of the impression I'm getting over Twitter. Is that what you're getting?
Yeah, I think it has been quite good. Obviously, Saka is an annoying one for a lot of us. 73% EO, I think, around the top couple of 100K. So most people have been burnt by Saka. But outside of that, Rea coming in with 11 saves, I think it was, and two bonus.
11, yeah, it was 11.
Crazy, absolutely crazy. I couldn't believe that when I saw it. So that's helped. A lot of people had a second Newcastle defender on their bench. So Botman and Cher have both done very well. A few people out there maybe with Dan Burn or Pope. So yeah, that's done really well. Pinnock for a few people hanging on to the Brentford defender. I sold him a couple of weeks ago, so a little bit frustrated.
Oh, I'm a Henry owner, so I'm just as bitter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you went with X fast over X tall, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I think generally everyone's fairly happy with bench boost so far. Obviously, we have to take into account any hits that any of us have taken and work that out as to how effective the bench boost has actually been. But I think I was always going to play it this week. I already measured in a -4, having known where I was going from the weeks before. So yeah, so far, okay. And fingers crossed, the second half of the game week can be as good as the first, and we'll get to maybe 20 plus points on average on the bench boost, making it a relative success for everyone.
And it'll be off our backs. So
yeah. Yeah.
We're doing just for that.
I hate the bench boost. I don't know about you. I hate it so much. It's such a frustration every season.
Yeah, it's such a strategy burden. You just spend so much time worrying about it, and really it only ever gains you about 20 to 25 points. So really, why did you bother? Because it just compromises your entire strategy for a prolonged period. Well, basically, for as long as you've got the gap between the wild card and the chip, basically. So, yeah, I think it's good to be rid of it. And it looks like it'll have not been an absolute car crash, which was the worry, I think, when we played it.
Always a positive. Yeah, as long as it's 15 plus points, it's okay. And we can start selling our 15th and 14th men now and start loading up the squad with some big hitters rather than spreading the money around. So yeah, it's good to finally get that off and finish that for the season.
Yeah, brilliant. All right, on that note, I think we'll take a break and we'll be back with you shortly.
Who got the assist?
So the other big news of the week were managerial departures at struggling Leicester, with now only Southampton below them in the table, and mediocre Chelsea now officially marooned in mid-table. So let's start with Leicester. I think there's no two ways about it. Their form is pretty ugly. It's 1 point in their last six, including a defeat to Southampton, which puts them rock bottom of the form table. But looking forward, after Villa during the double game week, they've got Bournemouth, City, obviously not so good, but Wolves, Leeds, Everton and Fulham. So aside from City, that's quite a tasty run. So I guess many people will be wondering, does a change in manager have any impact on our thoughts? Should we be looking at anyone other than Maddison, or have they just squandered their opportunity in our team because we were all interested in the double game week?
It's always hard to tell, especially before we know who the manager is that's coming in. There are already rumours and whispers circling, and you can imagine someone like Potter could be a target for them. I don't know whether he'd go, but it could be a target. But I think independent of any manager that comes in, James Maddison has been consistently brilliant throughout any patches of form they've had, whether it's been up or down. So if you own Maddison, I don't think you need to be panicking at all. And equally, I don't think you should expect him to start exploding in the next few weeks under a new manager. I think we expect more of the same from him. The team's basically molded around him anyway, and I don't think that would change with a new manager. Anyone who came in would probably see that Maddison is the linchpin in midfield, and they'll probably adapt a system around him just the way that Rodgers had. So I think if you've got Maddison, you're absolutely fine. I equally don't think if you don't have him yet, you don't really need to run to get to him now. That opportunity probably has come and gone in game week 29. And then obviously next week, Bournemouth, I think it is.
It's Bournemouth.
Yeah. But I don't think you're buying Maddison ahead of Bournemouth, knowing that City come after that. So I think outside of Maddison, if you're looking at other options, maybe a new manager comes in and tries to tighten them up, and they've got some very cheap defenders, especially if they try to play a five at the back under a new manager. You could see wing backs, Castagna, Pereira, or Ricardo, as he's known on the game. Both could become options potentially. I think Ricardo's at 4.3 now. So if we see Leicester tightening up, possibly, but I think we've seen all season that they're just not capable of doing that. So I'm not too interested in them. The one that I am interested in, if they're able to nail down a starting spot regularly, is Iheanacho. If he could be a 90-minute man under any new manager, if they prefer him and he hasn't done some horrible, despicable things to the manager that comes in, like he clearly has with Rodgers, then...
Kind of offence caused there, isn't there?
Exactly, yeah. The mystery of what he managed to do to annoy Brendan Rodgers will go on forever. But if he is able to nail down a starting spot under a new manager, he's under 7 million, I believe, maybe even 6.1, 6.2. And his underlying data has always been extremely strong. So if he was a regular starter, he could be a fantastic option. But outside of that, I'm not really too sure at this point, especially with midfield spaces being so restricted, as we mentioned earlier on in the pod. I know our co-host Tom has got Barnes at the moment. And obviously he's been very good all season. I think it's his highest ever goal scoring season in the Prem at 9 or 10 goals now. But again, I don't think you're running to him at this point if you don't already have him.
No, I think that is the problem with Leicester now, that the obvious opportunity was game week 29. At this point, are you actually going to prioritise them when you know that you've got all of these other doubles to prepare for? You've got other issues. I think it would take something really compelling, like, for example, Iheanacho being nailed, which is possible. But even when he was playing under Rodgers, he's not playing, like, he's often 60 to 70 minutes, which can be a bit annoying. I mean, as you said, he's 6.1, so he's cheap. But I just don't know, with these, you know, 9 or 10 games to go, is there ever going to be an opportunity to bring them in? I'm not sure there is, as much as that. I like to have this kind of like full game look, but I think realistically, we've got quite a narrow pool of players to look at, knowing that we've got to get the doubles for 34 and the doubles for 37 in. It's just one of those things, I think, where we're just not going to have the opportunity that we might have, as much as I'd like to be more positive on them. Obviously, as Southampton fans, we're hoping that it doesn't work. And they continue to be an absolute disaster.
Well, as we know, not all managerial appointments mid-season go well, do they, Lucy? So,
or in our experience, none of them ever. No. Okay, so let's move on. The other managerial move was obviously Chelsea, with Potter leaving his job on Sunday. They've also lost to Southampton in their last six, so that's clearly the beginning of the end for managers these days. They did pick up wins against Leeds and... Oh, yeah, Leicester. I see. So after this game week, the fixtures ahead are Wolves, Fulham, a blank, Brentford, Arsenal and Bournemouth. So again, a decent run if you're using the 32 free hit. And there's obviously that other double to come in 37. So, Chelsea, are they any more interesting to us than Leicester? Or have we just got to keep what we've got and see what happens?
I think they're a lot more interesting than Leicester. I think anyone who's not got Chilwell at the moment, if they were watching the Villa game, I would have been
behind
the sofa.
He was like a left winger, wasn't he?
He was like a left forward. It was ridiculous how far up the pitch he was. I cannot believe he didn't get a return in that game. And similarly, in the game before, I also thought it was ridiculous that he wasn't able to get some sort of return out of it. So... any Chilwell owners out there who are feeling a bit bitter at the moment, I am with you. Yeah, it's a mystery, but the returns should come eventually, as long as they keep playing a similar system. One thing I would say is they do have Liverpool up next, and I don't think they'll change the system midweek.
No.
And if Chilwell starts again, he goes directly up against Trent. So I'm interested in how that might go.
Yeah.
But that doesn't affect our transfer moves moving forward, I suppose. What I would say is, whoever comes in, they will probably have their own idea on an identity. I personally think that five at the back is the winning formula for Chelsea at this point. People listening in might disagree, but I think they've played a lot better with five at the back. And I actually think there were green shoots appearing under Potter before he got sacked anyway. I think they were actually relatively unlucky against Aston Villa as well. So I think there's a lot of promise there. And because they've still got the double game weeks to come, they could be a team that under a new manager could be very interesting to us in 2 or 3 weeks. For the time being, probably just wait and see, because we've got game week 32 to think about. We can probably wait until even after game week 34, because until that point, we'll be prioritising transfers for doublers then. But 35, 36, by which point we'll have seen a new manager, we'll have seen the new system and which players are working well under that new system. I think Chelsea transfers in around game week 35 and 36 could be extremely popular. And who knows, they've got a lot of attacking talent there. Any one of them could end up putting their hand up and being the go-to guy.
Yeah, I think that Villa game would have looked very different if Mudryk had scored that early opportunity.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they lacked those opportunities. So, you know, I feel like it was one of those games where had an early goal gone the other way, it could have looked very different. As you said, Chilwell, very unlucky not to get something. He seemed to spend most of his time just hovering in the box. Like every time even Loftus-Cheek got it in the right wing, he was at the back post waving for it. And I was like,
yeah,
what are you doing? But I do agree with you on the back five thing. Obviously, with Reece James and Ben Chilwell being their kind of big attacking outlets, it makes a lot of sense to play that system. And I was quite surprised that Potter elected to put James in at right centre back instead of wing back, because it's just not, he's good, but he's just not as effective there. So I think that might be something that a new manager looks to reverse. I think he's spot on about 35. They have Bournemouth followed by Forest in 35 and 36. So that would appear to be the obvious opportunity. And it's probably the one thing that's holding me back from selling Chilwell is that that little run, 35 and 36, followed by a double in 37. I don't know if I'd be able to get him back again. It's again that whole kind of like, how many free transfers have you got before the end of the season and how can you use them? Because that looks potentially really attractive.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think the issue with Chelsea is, does anyone know what their best 11 looks like apart from with a back five?
No, absolutely no idea. Like, especially at the front of the pitch, like I have no idea what their best three is. At the like, it obviously Felix features. he's been a real bright spark despite not having any end product so far. But Sterling's one to come back. Mudryk looks promising, but a bit raw at the moment, I think it's fair to say. And then they've got players like Madueke on the bench that could easily stand up and be counted at any given moment. So it's hard to know which of those players are going to be completely nailed into the side, possibly barring Havertz. But again, that was under an old manager now. You never know who comes in might have a different idea on Havertz. So just seems too risky to be moving in on any Chelsea attackers at the moment. The defence looks a little bit more certain, especially in the wing-back slots. But I don't think you can go towards James at the moment, because despite any manager is going to manage his minutes because he is a recurring injury doubt. So it looks like Chilwell is the safer of the options. And then outside of that, hopefully by game week 35, we can see a player that's consistently getting the minutes and maybe a few returns. But yeah, I don't know if anyone's standing out for you.
No, not really. I'm much the same. I think it's quite good that we have that breathing space on the fixtures so that we get a sense of what a new manager might want to do. I mean, I assume they're going to appoint someone, so we'll get a bit more of a settled idea, because they've got such a large squad that it would be a gamble to pick anyone at this stage, apart from probably Chilwell. And even then, I'm not sure I'd buy him if I didn't already have him. So,
no, I was just thinking that, like, if you don't already have him, because of game week 29, a lot of people went for him. But if you don't already have him, I'd probably go there until 35 now.
Yeah, unfortunately so. Right. Well, that probably brings us to transfers more generally, which brings me onto the market forces. I don't think I've ever done this before, so watch out. It's a very mixed bag, and I suspect that most engaged managers are waiting for the double game week to finish before making any moves. So the transfers in are pretty weird. So we've got Ben White topping the defender transfers with just short of 50k, thanks in large part, I think, to two goals in his last four. He's followed by Mings and Gabrielle, who both have 25,000 transfers in. The midfielder transfers are dominated by City, with Grealish, the pick of the bunch, on 37,000, and Mitoma and De Bruyne making up the top three. So perhaps, given what we've just discussed, that's not so surprising. And then up top, Gabriel Jesus leads the way, now officially back on the FPL menu after injury, with 52,000 transfers in. Again, these aren't huge transfer numbers, which again makes me think that people are waiting, probably for good reason. On the transfers out, Saliba is obviously the big casualty, over 100,000 transfers out after he missed out for Arsenal again. His ownership still hovers around 25%, so I think we can expect to see plenty more of those. Almiron continues to be the most sold midfielder with 54,000 transfers out. And perhaps unsurprisingly, given potential injury and certain suspension, Haaland and Mitrovic are the big sales in the forward area this week. Haaland's got 28,000 sales and Mitrovic is on 22,000. So a bit of a weird one there. Ben White being the main confusion there. But, you know, best defence in the league. Maybe it's not so wild. So I guess that brings us on, Sam. What are you thinking for transfers? Or are you solidly waiting for all this Haaland news?
Yeah, I've got to be waiting for the Haaland news at the moment because I'm so my team depends so heavily on who I would be taking out for Haaland at this point, because I've locked myself out of Tony to Haaland directly. I need to wait on a couple of factors, whether Tony is banned for one, that could influence things. Obviously, injuries in the second half of the game week as well. And then whether Kane is looking sharp under new management as well could potentially influence things, as well as the obvious elephant in the room of, is Haaland going to be fit for Southampton or not? If he is, as a Southampton fan, I might have some negative bias there, but I'd like to think he'd do quite well against us. So I think I'd probably move for him.
I love how Kane. Our bias works negatively. We're like, oh, they're playing Southampton, so they'll score like five goals.
Yeah, it's sad how many times we're right, though. So
I make a lot of points out of captaining against Saints, unfortunately.
Oh, no, it's so horrible. I'm looking forward to a year in the Championship and we actually might win a few games. But anyway, Haaland, yeah, would be the priority transfer in. It's just a matter of how much I trust whether he starts or not. If I'm even slightly doubtful, I might chance my arm against it and look elsewhere, maybe at Salah. But
yeah. Have you got an easy route to Salah?
I've got a complicated route to Salah, but I'm confident that I'd do it. And that would be Saka and Tony. And Tony would go for Greenwood. And that would open up funds. And either way, eventually I need to downgrade one of my striker slots. And I think that's the position I'm happiest to do a downgrade in at this point.
Yeah, I think that's the least area of least value, isn't it, really?
Yeah, exactly. And midfield seems to be the area of most value by a considerable margin at the moment. So I'm happy to prioritise an upside pick in midfield and get Salah in early ahead of game week 34. And then effectively what I'd be doing is reversing my priority list from Haaland comes in ASAP to Salah comes in ASAP. And then Haaland comes in after the free hit instead of Salah coming in after the free hit. So that would be my logic. But whether or not we get good information before the deadline, who knows? How about you? What are you thinking so far?
Well, I think the problem is, as you said, with there's just so much unknown, particularly with this Tony not suspension, maybe suspension hanging over us with the nine yellow cards. Obviously, if Haaland isn't available and Tony isn't suspended, I might even be tempted to roll, knowing that Liverpool play Arsenal. So it's not exactly the ideal time to buy Salah.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Saka to Salah is a move I can currently afford, although prices will have to be kind to me. But yeah, I don't yet know if I would make that move straight away if Tony's available, because it kind of reduces the incentive to do it. But yeah, it really just depends on Haaland, because obviously if Haaland is available, not only is he the obvious transfer, he's also the obvious captain.
Yeah.
Do you have any ideas where you'd put the captaincy if you couldn't buy Haaland?
Yeah, so, well, it goes against what I was just saying my potential transfers could be. And I think you make a really good point, by the way, on maybe just rolling. And then you could do the double transfer the following week for free, especially if you've got double Brighton midfield and you could just end up playing both of them instead of Tony and just holding. But captaincy-wise, you could look at someone like Saka away at Liverpool. I don't mind that at all. And it would be pretty different, but Liverpool have been very shaky at the back all season in terms of big chances conceded. I know their XG has been better as of late, but they still look like they're conceding a relatively decent amount of big chances. And Saka might not be the prime candidate in that team either. If you had Martinelli, I'd be seriously tempted to go there, because I can see them having a lot of joy down that left wing. Other than that, Everton at home for Rashford seems like a pretty good bet. Rashford at home as well has been very, very good. There was a running theory a few weeks ago that you could, because City and United never play home at the same time, you could just switch the captaincy week to week and have Haaland when City are at home and Rashford when United are at home. So Rashford could be a bet, but he has actually blanked 3 times in a row now, which I couldn't believe. I still haven't lost faith in him, though. I think he's still a great option. So I'd be pretty comfortable going with either of those options. Is there anyone else standing out for you?
No, I have to say, I think it's that Man United home fixture against Everton. I think that's far and away the best fixture in terms of likely owned assets and what's available. I think Spurs at home to Brighton obviously isn't a great fixture for Kane. No. That probably rules him out. You're not likely to have another Man City player, because obviously if you had someone like Grealish, even then that feels like a massive risk. So yeah, I can't really look beyond Man United, really. And that sounds very dull.
Just out of interest, nobody is doing this, surely, but if you were feeling really brave and you knew Haaland was out, would you swap to Alvarez and put the captaincy on him?
No. I mean, no. I wouldn't. I'm just too dull for that. I could see.
Yeah, so am I. So am I.
I would do that. And maybe it could be, you know, we're discussing if Tony got suspended, but Haaland wasn't available, maybe someone would look at Tony to Alvarez, and that would also probably, you know, in your position, for example, Tony to Alvarez, would that be enough to buy you Salah?
I'd have to double check.
You see, now I put a thought into your head.
Maybe. I'll look at that and see if it is. Realistically, I think Haaland plays, as I mentioned earlier, but if we get news that he's out, and for example, if we get news that for some reason he's out for a good couple of weeks, Alvarez could be nailed-ish into that City lineup up front in a team that are creating chances specifically for a centre-forward now. He could be a bet that you could make. So, yeah, interesting, but probably too rich for my blood.
I think the other thing you have to kind of take into consideration with Man United is, because of this double game week where people have gone quite big on Man United, so obviously Bruno's been quite popular, as has Shaw, I think you've got to factor in the fact, and I don't like being conservative like this, but EO on those Man United players is going to be high. So yeah, captaincy could be extra torturous. You know, we've seen Rashford's got, what, about 150% this week. It wouldn't be that surprising if it was similar next week, particularly given that a lot of people have kind of diverged in their strategies over the double game week. So I think that's probably something to take into consideration, particularly if you're defending rank. Then I think Man United almost become kind of a no-brainer. It's just how you chase if you want to switch it up, because there aren't many obvious fixtures. So something like Alvarez might be the best way to make up ground. Or I'm not completely against the Saka thing. But I just feel it feels a bit counterintuitive going away at Liverpool for a captaincy, as good as Arsenal have been. There's just a real dearth of like obvious options this week, just because quite a lot of decent teams are effectively cancelling each other out. You know, Liverpool and Arsenal, Spurs and Brighton. I mean, whether you call Spurs good or not is another thing.
They've got a good player.
Brentford and Newcastle being another one. Like, there's just not many good teams against poor teams this week. And you just get that quirk of the fixture schedule sometimes, don't you? That's just the case. And it can be a little bit frustrating if you want to look away from the obvious in Man United here to try and find a way to gain rank. There aren't many obvious ones, so I think you're going to have to take a big punt if you want to do that. And yeah. I would tend to think that if you're having to force that kind of differential captaincy, then maybe this isn't the week to be looking at that, because it could just be very, very painful, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd have to be extremely brave if Haaland was out to go against Rashford, especially considering the EO argument that you made as well. He will be very, very highly owned, probably akin to this week as well. So yeah, I think Rashford is the obvious bet if Haaland is out for any reason.
Well, I think on that moment of agreement, Tom won't be too disappointed with what we've put together this week. Thank you for coming on, Sam. Hope you've had a good time. Thanks for your thoughts.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. And thanks again, Lucy, for having me on. I've really enjoyed it. And it's been great chatting to you face to face for the first time as well. And also, it's always great to be on the show too. So as always, we were Who Got the Assist. You can find us on Twitter at WGTA_FPL. You can find Lucy at Lucy Hynett with two T's. And you can find me, Sam, at FPL Pricey. As always, as well, if you did enjoy listening to this, please like and subscribe to the podcast. For new listeners out there, if you think you'll be coming back, please hit that 5-star rating across platforms like iTunes and Spotify. It really does go a long way, and it helps other people find the podcast as well.
Thanks, everyone. We'll be back next week to see how the dust settles. Thanks for listening.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.